Steve tonight. We got the exclusive interview on FacesOfSuccessRadio.com. I'm your host, Pearl Johnson. How are you, Rodney?
Hey, Pearl.
Yeah, I am really excited to have you on Faces of Success Radio. I can hear you loud and clear, and we want to jump right into your interview. And I want to kind of start off by asking you, I know that, you know, coming into the entertainment world started at a very young, tender age for you. I mean, and with you being born in 1968 and by the early 70s, what was it, 74 or something like that, you were already into
72.
You were already into show business. What was that like for you to, you know, for your face to be, you know, all over America, you know, as a kid, on every Jack in the Box commercial?
Well, I have to tell you, it was a whirlwind opportunity. I was just a little boy growing up on the west side of Long Beach, California. I was a child in a middle class family, and there was nothing special about us. We were just a loving family. My parents were not from the entertainment industry, and you know, my mom was a wonderful Southern girl from back in North Carolina, and you know, it was just when it happened, nobody was expecting it.
So when you got that call, tell us the story. How did that all come about?
Well,
how did it all come to life?
Well, it was just a wonderful little afternoon. I was a little boy, 3.5 years old, or around 3 years old, and I was sitting there watching The Little Rascals and laughing, as you know, all little kids would do, watching The Little Rascals, of course. And my mom came in the room and said, "Well, what's so funny?" And I told my mom, I said, "I'm laughing at buckwheat." And so my mom said, "What, you think you could do that?" And I said, "Sure." And my mom said, "Well, you wouldn't be afraid of all the cameras and the lights and the people?" And I said, "Nope." So my mom picked up the Yellow Pages in 1972, and believe it or not, there were agents and talent managers in the Yellow Pages. Many of them were not the best. Some were trying to find their way, because that was like the whole start of the whole agent world in entertainment. That was when it all kicked off. And so through a little bit of trial and error, my sister Beverly Lee, my brother Kenneth Wayne, and I, we were all signed up with an agent. And we got signed to Dorothy Day Otis, which was the number one child talent agent in Hollywood. And just luck of the draw, my sister, she ended up doing a commercial. My brother had a couple auditions. And I was the baby of the bunch. I got the call for the Jack in the Box ad. And so at that time, Jack in the Box was in financial trouble. Some things that happened at the company was in trouble. I mean, like, they were in Chapter 11. And they said, "Well, this is our last-ditch effort. We need a kid, a mascot, a boy, a girl." They didn't care what nationality. So they had a huge cattle call, which is like, in Hollywood, a cattle call is like a huge casting. So there were like 100 kids called in, and I went in. And so when we walked in, my mom was very concerned because I was so small. And she said, "Wow, you have all this competition for your first interview." And my mom just told me as we were sitting there, she said, "Rodney, baby, just do your best." So my mom was trying to figure out an angle to give me an edge over this whole room full of kids. And my mom said, "Rodney, I smell food cooking. I think they're going to give you food." I'm like, "Yeah." And she goes, "Don't talk with your mouth full. And remember all the manners I taught you, and don't put your elbows on the table." And my mom said, "No matter what they bait you with, don't touch it until they tell you." And I said, "Okay, I got it." So when they called me in, I walked to the door, my mom walked me over, and she got down on one knee and looked at me, and she said, "Rodney," she said, "baby, I can't go any further." She said, "You're going to have to do this. I can't go inside with you." And I'm 3.5 years old. And she said, She kissed me on the cheek and whispered in my ear, just remember, don't talk with your mouth full. So I go in, and sure enough, there was one guy in the room. There was a small little camera. It wasn't even a professional movie camera. It was just a, like a casting camera, a tripod, and a table. And on this, in this little room, there was a lady making fresh Jumbo Jacks for every kid. So she had all, apparently she had the recipe, and she's making every kid their own Jumbo Jack fresh. So I'm sitting there and she's frying and cooking this thing in an electric skillet. Next thing you know, she plops down this big gigantic burger in front of me. And I'm, you know, I'm a little boy. I'm wanting to attack it, but I'm like, don't touch it. Don't touch it. And I didn't. I just sat there. And so the guy started talking to me. And if you go on YouTube and you type in Rodney Allen Rippey and you put Jumbo Jack right behind it, that is my actual audition that became the very first commercial, because you'll hear very clearly it's the casting director talking to me. And so we went through the audition. He asked me my name. He said, what's that in front of you? I said, the Jumbo Jack from Jack in the Box. He goes, do you think you could get a bite out of it? I looked at it. I said, it's too big to eat. And he said, well, pick it up and take a bite. So I picked this thing up, and I said, well, Rodney, he told you to take a bite. And, you know, being a little three-year-old boy, I'm going to take a big bite. So I took this huge bite, and he said, tell me how you like it. And the last thing I remember was Mom saying, don't talk with your mouth full. And I told the guy, that, can't talk my mouth full. And he died laughing. And that was the audition.
You know, I actually have viewed that video I don't know how many times, so I know exactly which one you're talking about. And as a child, I used to watch you all the time. So, you know, I grew up watching you, you know, I'm very, very fond of you and have followed you, you know, as a kid myself. And so I know that moment had to be very, very exciting for you. And I can't help but ask, outside of the burger and, you know, what else inspired you to want to be, you know, I know you watched The Little Rascals, but was there other things that inspired you to want to become, you know, an actor, a young actor?
Well, to answer your question, you hit it right on the head, because me watching The Little Rascals, I always imagined myself as one of the gang. And it always looked like they were having so much fun. And the reason why, when my mom asked me, do you think you could do that? You think you could be in television? I said, yeah, I literally imagined being inside the TV with the gang. So for me, it was a mental thing. I'm sitting here thinking like, man, if I could get in television, I can hang out with the gang.
Right.
But from that, you know, I was just your normal little boy, and I watched all of the little TV shows from Sesame Street and everything else, and I always just enjoyed seeing that, you know, and seeing the little kids and imagining myself having fun and going through all the things that they did on television at that time. And I was very blessed. It was a huge opportunity for me. And when the Jack in the Box commercial got started, when I landed that deal, that was a 14-year run with Jack in the Box. And I did commercials, and we had a doll, and we had an album. And, you know, matter of fact, there was a jingle to one of the commercials, Take Life a Little Easier. That became the title track song to my album, which just got re-released by Sony worldwide on June 2nd of this year. So now parents can now get my album for their kids. And a lot of parents are concerned about what their kids are listening to these days. And right now, there's not that much, you know, kid-friendly music out there. And so I would love to tell people, hey, go to Spotify, go to Amazon Music, and check out Take Life a Little Easier for your kids.
Yeah, and they definitely should have that at Disney World, you know, and stuff like that, you know, for the, you know, just like theme songs to be playing. But, you know, I know a lot of people wonder, you know, what's the story behind your name? Because when you hear Rodney Allen Rippey, you almost think that, you know, it's just a stage name, but it's actually your name. So Rippey, where did that come from? Is that actually
believe it or not? Yeah, that's my real name, R-I-P-P-Y. And believe it or not, the Rippeys, and God bless them, they're back there in Dayton, Ohio. That's my dad's side of the family out of Dayton. And big shout out to Dayton, Ohio. It's been years since I've been back. I need to go and see all my family. And my folks are back in on the East Coast in North Carolina. So I love my dad, Fred Rippey, and my stepmom, Sylvia. Sadly, when I was, you know, my mom, who was so instrumental in my entertainment career and getting started, you know, mom was there all the way. I mean, from $6 Million Man, The Police Story, Dr. Welby, MD, The Odd Couple. Oh, man, Merv Griffin's special. I mean, just a whole series of Jack in the Box ads. But when I, you know, I went through the whole industry, worked with Mel Brooks and Blazing Saddles. I was also one of the children acting in the movie Oh God, Book Two with George Burns. I had the pleasure of working with so many megastars, the real Hollywood. And in 1980, my parents and everyone, they decided to move to North Carolina. Well, when we later found out mom was sick. Mom had cancer, and I didn't know this. You know, I was only 12 at that time. So we moved to North Carolina, and mom reunited with family and cousins and everything. And sadly, my mom passed away when I was just 18. So I was a senior in high school, and my mom passed, and she was literally the center of my focus. She was my, you know, like whenever I had a script, mama drilled with me, and she helped me learn my lines. And so she was a fashion designer, a tailor. So a lot of times if you go back in the archives and you see me as a little boy, the outfits I was wearing, my mom tailored those for me.
Oh, wow.
I look like a little rock star. So when I was walking around, I'm in platforms and bell-bottom blue jeans and jackets with rhinestones and studs. All that was my mom. Nobody knew. And they were like, Mr. Rippey must have a designer. Who is his designer? And my mom wouldn't say nothing. She'd stand there and kind of smirk. And it was my mom the whole time. And a lot of people ask me, who was it, you know, they loved my afro. That was my mom. My mom loved messing around with hair, you know, like most black moms do. And so I had this beautiful, shiny afro that just, you know, that people, you know, it was funny. I met this guy recently. He goes, man, I wanted a fro like yours so bad. He said, you had the perfect fro. I was, well, shout out to my mom, you know.
Yeah, at the age of 5, you became the youngest person that ever made any Billboard music chart. You know, that is just amazing. You know what I mean? And since then, have you written any music or created any other music since those
days? It's funny you mention that. I have several colleagues who are music people. Producers, writers, and I've got people wanting me to get in the studio. So this may be something that's forthcoming. There may be a single coming. I you know, it's just that when I have these things going, I mean, there's several major projects going right now. I've been asked to be a cast member in a major feature film called Bucks of America. And there's a gentleman here in L.A., Mr. Robert Gatewood. He's a historian, and so he has a story about African-Americans in the Revolutionary War that's never been told. And there's some facts that have never came out. And so I'm involved with that. I'm also a co-producer on the Country Soul Music Awards that's coming up 2023. Me and a colleague, James Andrew, we have a reality series coming up called Taylor Wars. And a lot of times when you see these fashion shows and like Fashion Runway, you always see the people, the clothes and the stars, but you don't see people making the stuff. Well, my dear friend, James Andrew, Taylor to the Stars, he's working on putting together a show where Taylors are going to battle. And so I've been asked to have my own show on a new NFT platform and on Roku with Fizz TV. And they're currently selling my NFTs on Fizz. That's T-H-I-Z-Z TV. So you can check them out. Wow. I just got asked to host a Thursday morning show every Thursday on This Way Network. So it's going to be a positive talk show. And it's me and a couple other hosts. And so every Thursday, we're just going to be talking about current events and how to make this world better. Because it seems like right now, boy, I tell you, we need some serious conversation and we need some serious, you know, love. I mean, the Lord is just, you know, it seems that people have lost their way. Things are getting pretty foggy out there. And so that's what we're hoping to do with, you know, This Way. And actually, it's called the Chat Session on Thursdays. And so, you know, being on wonderful shows like, you know, Faces of Success, and thank you for everything you're doing in broadcast and television there. And, you know, you're doing music reviews and work with people. And I can't wait again. And I had such a wonderful time coming to your big charity event. I'm really hoping and looking forward to what's going to happen next year and your next event. And one of the hot things that's happening with me, I have a television show I'm putting together called The Celebrity Shootout. And The Celebrity Shootout is a televised and world-streamed broadcast where I'm going to bring all the biggest stars in music, entertainment, other VIPs, and have them all drag race for charity. And so this is going to raise multiples of millions of dollars for charity. And I'm currently in talks with Fox Sports. They want the project. I'm in contact with the National Hot Rod Association. And so they want to be able to have a celebrity-driven kind of spectacular like this. And all of the celebrities, you know, from Jay Leno to, golly, I mean, I can go down a whole list of people, not to mention all the music people like Rick Ross, yes, and 50 Cent, and all these guys, they all got Porsches, Ferraris, Lamborghinis, and on and on and on. The goal is to get these guys and girls out there, and Kim Kardashian and Lady Gaga, and have them pick a charity of their choice, and we're going to leverage their fan base to raise major money in action, live, as this thing is streaming worldwide. So pray for me. Keep your fingers crossed. Keep your ears open for the Celebrity Shootout. That's something that I'm currently working on. And, you know, I'm looking at launching my own podcast, the Rodney Allen Ripley Show. And so between entertainment, music, marketing, you know, I'm constantly, you know, network with people. Oh, I'm also working with a wonderful lady who's launching an NFT platform called Metacliff. And what they're doing is they're going to music artists, top-tier music artists, and we're doing non-exclusive NFT music licensing deals. And so now this thing is getting hot, and we've got our targets on, you know, top-level people from you know, Justin Timberlake and Justin Bieber and, you know, Wiz Khalifa and DJ Khaled. And I mean, we got people, we're currently talking to somebody out of the Wu-Tang Clan. So we've got this, it's never ending. When it comes down to entertainment and media, it's never ending. And I actually have a radio network running right now with a colleague of mine called KJBM Radio, and that's running nationwide 24 hours a day, and we're streaming beautiful music.
Yeah, and so with that being said, that's a, you know, you've got a lot. I mean, I look up to you, you know, I have always had, you know, ever since you were a child, and I was one. But, I mean, I really am very proud of you, very, very proud of you, and even more proud to be able to know you. My question is, like, at the age of kinder age of five, already in the spotlight all over television worldwide, I mean, on every commercial, I mean, on every network, you know, I mean, how was it with your first teacher? I mean, did you have a private teacher? You know, how did that go for you?
You know, the funny thing was, I was actually going to a private school. And this is going to be in my book. I can't let this happen. I'm in the middle of writing my autobiography as we speak. But there was something that happened at a private school that just, my mom was like livid. And she said, that's it. She said, Rodney, I'm putting you in a public school. And believe it or not, when I was a little boy, I went to a little public school in Long Beach, right down the street from my house on the west side of Long Beach, called John Muir Elementary. And so,
wow.
big shout out to all the people at John Muir. But, you know, I went to public school. Now, when I was working in television and we were on the set, a lot of people don't know that if you are below 18 years old, you must keep your grades up and you have to have a on-set tutor. So whenever I was doing the Jack in the Box commercials or the television show appearances, I would have to go to my teacher and get my homework in advance. And then I would give that homework to the set tutor, the teacher on the set. And the state of California logged the hours that I was. So a lot of people think that little kids miss television and it's all about partying and they miss school. No, they don't. You cannot even work. You cannot even get a work permit unless you go to school. And you got to keep your grades. Yeah, and a lot of people don't know you have to keep your grades above a C level or the state of California will not issue you a work permit. See, these are fun trivia things that a lot of people don't know. And of course, you know, thank goodness to the Coogan Law, that's where it dates all the way back to like Shirley Temple, because sadly their parents got into some of the kids' money and burned through it. Well, the Coogan Law came out where when child actors like myself made money, that money went into a trust account and was set and supposed to be held for you when you got of age, when you got to be 18 or whatever. And thank God I had loving parents that set my money aside. And when I finished high school, my college was paid for, and I went out and bought myself a classic Corvette, and which I still own. And the whole thing is, you know, my dad was a man that made his own money. My dad was very industrious. He, you know, he retired from the city of Long Beach, and then he started his own trucking company. He got into real estate. That was dad. That was dad's money doing his own thing. And thank God, mom and dad just set my money aside for me. And, you know, 54 years later, you know, thank God, I'm still... They took care of me, and so now it allowed me to get wind in my sails and allow me to get on down the road, get my education, and here I am. So now after post-college, I started my own marketing PR company, Rip Marketing Group. I have a digital media company called Stealth Mobile Ads. I'm constantly working and turning and working on other people's projects. So I just have to go, okay, there's only so much time in the day, but it's all manageable with, you know, proper time management.
Amen. Well, being as young as you were and being on the set, like with the $6 Million Man, Marcus Welby, you know, The Odd Couple, all these different shows that you were involved with, how was that for you? You know, even, you know, hanging out with the Harlem Globetrotters, stuff like that, and doing stuff, you know, how was that for you? I mean, did you have a lot of anxiety? Did it make you nervous? Did you even know who you were around at the time? I mean, how did that play out for you?
You know, it's funny you asked that. One of the things was the $6 Million Man. That is funny because you mentioning that just brought back a beautiful memory. When I got the call, they were like, hey, Rodney, you know, at that time, these TV shows were calling me. There was no audition. It was like, we want Rodney. Rodney's got a role. And let me tell you something. In Hollywood, that is where you want to be. You don't want to be auditioning. And I hate to say it because it's such a drag because you're out there and there's 50 million people, literally. No, I ain't going to say 50 million. This is the truth. Right now in Hollywood, there are probably 50 to probably 70 people that can do the same exact role. And when they cast it, they know what they want. They want an African-American, certain height, certain build. So when you go into an audition, you look around the room, it looks like you're looking at yourself around the room, which is kind of spooky. But to answer your question, it was amazing because when I did the $6 Million Man, I was a little kid, and I used to watch him on TV. So when I got that call, I was ecstatic. So when I got on the set, I was like, the $6 Million Man. And I asked him, I said, are you really bionic? And he said, yes, I am. And I was like, oh, I knew it. And so I said, can I feel your muscles? And he bent down. And he said, feel that. And I felt his muscles. I was like, oh, he is bionic, you know. And the beautiful thing was, so they had, the whole cast had me fooled all day. And I was just like, oh, man. I was so jazzed thinking about, you know, literally I was there with the bionic, you know, with the $6 Million Man, and that he was bionic and all this stuff. But it was a beautiful, beautiful time. And, yes, I did know who these people were. I knew it was serious business. And at the age of, literally, at the age of 3 1/2, 4, 5, my mom told me, she said, Rodney, sweetheart, this is serious business. She said, do you see all these people standing around? You see all these lights and these cameras? She said, sweetheart, it costs a lot of money for these people to be here. She said, sweetheart, don't worry about nothing. Just do your job. Hit your lines. Don't worry about nothing else. I said, I got it. So my mom was like a loving coach. And anytime when I was on the set, my mom was within eyeshot. You know, I could see my mom. And so she would give me a thumbs up. She was always there. You know, in Hollywood, a lot, you know, people say, well, was your mother a stage mother? No. My mother was a country girl. So there was no stage in her. It was just she had love for me and she wanted to see me be successful. And it wasn't about her. It was about me. And she just made sure that she was there to assist me and keep my afro tight. And she did. That was it.
Wow. That's beautiful. Let me ask you, what actor do you admire the most and why?
Wow. You know, you got people like, you know, James Earl Jones, you know, Louis Gossett Jr. I mean, you got these people that just did, you know, so much work in the entertainment industry and opened doors, you know, and some that have passed on. I mean, they were inspirational, you know, and it's just amazing that in Hollywood, sometimes you're able to get invited to a nice event, and there they are. These are your these are the people whose shoulders we literally stand on. I mean, because they were there. I mean, they were the ones who opened doors. And a lot of people have said, you know, Rodney, well, you've opened doors too. And I take that humbly, and I never forget that. And I try to do my best to pass on my knowledge, my experience, and uphold what people expect me to. You know, my mom always told me, she said, Rodney, a lot of people are counting on you. And I said, Mama, I'm just a little boy. She said, sweetheart, it doesn't matter. She said, you'll understand one day. And I literally grew up in the entertainment industry. And my mom always reminded me, she said, Rodney, people are counting on you. And I was like, well, who are these people? She said, you don't even know. Just know that people are counting on you. And I was like, so, I, you know, people have always asked, well, what kept you so centered? Thank God it was having a godly family. And, you know, and I told people straight up, I mean, I'm being real. Did we go to church every single Sunday? No. But was I brought up in a household where there was awareness and principles of godliness and always understanding that there was something much bigger and much more powerful than I and so and us? And so that's the way I was raised. And then on top of that, thank God I had a father who led by example. I saw him be a hardworking man. I saw how he took care of our family. I saw how he respected my mother, how my mother respected him, how they communicated. And it was just a beautiful thing. I saw a real functioning, love, you know, loving family in action. I was part of that. And so, and I hate to say it, you know, I've talked to people and they go, oh, well, that's just, I didn't grow up in that type of situation. I go, I'm so sorry. You know, and I don't know anything else. But I think that we as people, we can do better. We can do better with families. We can do better with our children, with our society, politics, our environment, the homeless, veterans, mental illness. I don't want to get on my soapbox, but we can do better.
I know, and you know, there's so much more. Actually, I'm not. I don't want to take it away from your spotlight, but actually, you know, I just got a call just 2 days ago from a school teacher that you know is actually going through a lot of domestic violence right now, and I'm actually aiding her housing. And I mean, what I had heard and had to go through, you would not believe. And I'm just getting so many different calls, you know, from people all over the world that are going through so much. And there's so much, you know, teen suicide right now because there's so much pressure, you know, on these families. We got to pull together and start doing some things. It's bringing families and stuff together because we're losing them at young ages. I mean, it's like crazy numbers that, you know, and it's heartbreaking. But I have something else I want to ask. But before I do, I have to make this announcement. For those of you that are just tuning in, you're on FacesOfSuccessRadio.com. We have Rodney Allen Riff's exclusive interview this evening. I'm your host, Pearl J. And we're going to continue on this interview. And so I want to ask you this. What is the biggest problem you've ever encountered in show business?
Wow. The biggest thing, I would say, probably right now, what's going on in entertainment. A lot of people don't understand what's happening. Like when back in the day, you would audition. You could build real relationships, real friendships with the casting directors. And it wasn't any funny business. It was about your skill. It was about your talent. It was about them really liking to book you in TV shows and or not if you just didn't fit or if you just went in and fumbled on the audition. That was you, or it was really you against, that's it. I mean, it's all up to the actor. sadly, because of COVID, what has happened is now actors are being forced to submit video auditions. So you will get an audition from your agent, and they will say, okay, well, here's a script, and we want you to act this role out. And it is completely sterile. It is there is no connection. And you literally record a video, and you upload it to your agent. And then your agent uploads it and sends it to the casting people. And we have lost that human touch when it comes down to, you know, seeing that casting director that knew you, that booked you on a television series, and they want to see you work again, or they like your delivery, or they like your humor, or they like whatever it is about you, that has been taken away. And so, and maybe to never return. I mean, I have several major actor friends, and people just really dislike the casting. And so I think probably one of the greatest things, or the greatest challenges, is the current casting. And now there is a huge shift because of all of the digital channels and the streaming platforms. And so you find yourself having literally to reinvent yourself to a new audience, because the people that remember me from, you know, the early days have since probably retired, and their sons and daughters are running these production companies, if not a completely new Hollywood. So it's about staying relevant, staying creative, and that's why I'm in the NFT space. That's why I'm in music and production and digital media. And I was just at a studio with some people over near Northridge, and it was incredible, because the type of things is what you see going on is these video walls. And so when you walk into these studios now, it's very tech, it's very high tech, and when you walk in, it's like, wow. And
you know,
these people, uh-huh?
No, I said, I know. I said, because Capitol Records just signed a virtual rapper, a robot rapper, called F. What is his name?
NF Mecca.
FN Mecca. Yeah, he has 10 million followers on TikTok. And so I'm saying to myself, when I actually seen that, oh God, we better get ready, because we're getting ready. Things is changing. Things is changing. When Capitol Records starts signing robots, is getting ready to happen.
we got to get back to real instruments, real players. I mean, when you start talking about people like Maze and Frankie Beverly and the Gap Band, and I mean, you know, when you start talking about real musicians, real players, those guys and girls back in that Chaka Khan and Anita Baker, and I mean, we can just go down a whole list of real artists that were legends, and they drove the music industry. And yeah, that was an AI. The person that you're talking about, that robot. And matter of fact, I don't know if you know this, the record label just dropped them, because it became a huge problem, because this robot was saying basically racially insensitive things in his rap. And people said, well, wait a minute, how is this robot saying this? Who is behind it? And when they found out who was behind it, it wasn't a brother. So they were like, oh, no, we can't do this. So they actually just killed that contract for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's
That's
over.
Interesting.
It's just as quick as it came in. They had 10 million followers, and they had to shut that thing down.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you caught a piece of it, but I got the latest update. That contract is over. It's done.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to ask you, being a little chocolate, little brown, little boy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know back then times was kind of crazy. So how were you accepted, you know, amongst, you know, people that didn't look like you and me?
Well, you know what? I was just blessed to be at the right place at the right time. And honestly, you know, a lot of times I say we as African Americans have lost our way, because back in the 70s, we had that black pride. We had that black love for one another. And now things are really going awry. Yes, we have a lot of great things going on. Yeah, we have a lot of great advancements and probably making more money than we ever made. But something is happening with our love and care for one another. And matter of fact, I was just talking with a gentleman, and we were talking about what we see. And again, I understand the media is going to drive probably some of the worst images ever, but we know the real truth. They can't make this stuff up, and they're not. And the reality of it is, we as African Americans are responsible for our own. We are responsible for our own ability to teach and to raise our kids with a different standard. And this whole thing. And again. When you look at these young people who are running in places and snatching up clothes and stuff like that, that's a spiritual and moral breakdown. Because when I was a kid, when I was 14, 15, man, I would never dare to go do something crazy like that. Now it just seems like, and the problem is these kids are emboldened because their access to weapons. You have to be very, very careful. I was talking with somebody about this very seriously. We got a serious problem in this nation with the proliferation of guns being in the young hands. I mean, they got kids that are 13 years old, and they walking down the hallway, and blam, a gun falls out of their pocket on the floor, mm-hmm. 13. And I'm like, we got to do something, because this is a serious issue. And again, I am not anti-guns, not at all. You know, I believe that, you know, I was raised in a home. My dad was a hunter. So my dad had heat. There was always some heat in the house. But the bottom line was, there was some knowledge and understanding that, hey, you do not touch this. You do not go in my drawer. You do not be rambling in my stuff, because I got a Crown Royal bag with a dangling 38 in it, and it will kill you. And so that was the real deal. That's my reality. That is the real truth. But we have to do something now, because, you know, being that little boy back in the 70s, and how was I accepted? I was blessed, you know, to represent a major fast food company like that, and to be on all of the top rated shows. It was just something that, it was a blessing that came down the pipeline, and I've never forgot that. I never walk around and, you know, I meet people and they talk to me and they say, dude, you one of the most level headed people around. I'm like, yeah, because I'm real with it. And my mom told me, never ever let this go to your head. She said, Rodney, the moment that you start thinking that you're somebody, they will hate you and turn away. And right. I know that.
Right.
So I keep it real. I keep it real. I got real friends. I do real things. And I don't forget those who are less fortunate. I don't laugh at someone going through hard times and stuff like that, because I know we are all. You know, when you start thinking about the average American, seriously, cut off three paychecks, they losing something. Phone's going off, car payment's going to get late, something, it's going to adversely affect that family, white, black, Asian, Latino, it don't matter your nationality, because many families are running close to the edge. So I never forget to be thankful for little things. Thank God for good health. I mean, and you know, we just came over this global pandemic and we're still dealing with it. And so we have to be thankful for the little things that we have. And I personally am. That's what keeps me glued together.
Amen to that. And I'm with you 100% on that. The pandemic, you know, oh gosh, COVID had me so uptight that I think that it affected me mentally, actually. And I was so afraid of catching that stuff. I was almost calling 911 every 15 minutes. I'm thinking that
I remember you telling me that.
Yeah,
I remember that.
I felt
that way. I was like, poor thing. But yeah, I mean, it's serious because we've all lost people. Mm-hmm. There were people I knew, and they were here 1 minute, and they're gone the next. And I'm like, this is serious. And so, you know, I didn't take it lightly, you know. And I'm like, listen, whatever it is, some people say, oh, it ain't nothing but the cold. I'm like, I'm putting my mask on, cold or not, you know. And I paid very close attention to being in tight surroundings with people. And trust me, I cut my Hollywood party way back and my hanging out way back because, you know, until this thing kind of settles down, you know, you have to be mindful of what is. And I'm like, I don't know how it got started. I don't know who did it, how it got started. I don't care. The most important thing is, how can I protect myself and protect my loved ones around me, period.
Right. So my other question would be to you, how do you handle, you know, your travel, you know, frequent travels, being away from home for long periods of time, you know, and stuff like that? How do you?
Well, I try to keep up with my family as much as I can. I, you know, through social media, phone calls, whenever I can get away, which I'm hoping within the next, month to be able to take a trip back home to go visit my folks. And also, too, you know, I have business associates from coast to coast, and also I'm working with a group out of Richmond, Virginia, and believe it or not, there is an organization called NARSA, and NARSA, they are tied to 350 housing authorities across the country, the biggest housing authorities, and I'm working with some people, a gentleman by the name of Sam Little, Julian Marsh, Gerald Bennett, out of HUD, out of the headquarters of HUD, out of Washington, D.C. We are working on a national STEM project to bring STEM, science, technology, engineering, the arts, and math, to young people who have been left out at the housing authority level. And we want to make sure that there is diversity and equity in STEM education. And so I'm proud to be a part of it. I'm one of the media representatives and working with them. And we are going to be taking STEM programs coast to coast and making sure that these programs are accessible to young people so that, you know, the brown and black kids and those kids who are less fortunate have better opportunities. And when you look at housing authorities across the country, oftentimes there are food deserts. There are no fresh foods and fresh markets around them. And so these are things that have to get fixed. So we're teaching not only the kids, but we're teaching parents and job creation and job opportunities and career pathways. That's what we're putting together right now. And so please, you know, continue to pray for us and help us help the least of those across the country, because education is serious. We look at right now, we have a huge problem with supply chain. And the reason, and they're looking back 25 years, the reason why we have supply chain issues is because we weren't taking care of STEM education. And there were so many hundreds and hundreds of thousands, if not millions of kids were left out of STEM education. So I'm proud to be a part of that. So I'm working with that. There's a assistant, beautiful young lady here in Los Angeles, California. She has a deal going with Best Buy, and they have a STEM center in South Central LA. Best Buy, the multi-billion dollar company. Best Buy, you know, home gear, you know, homeware and electronics and all the other crazy things that they have at Best Buy. They are going across the country setting up STEM centers in areas that have been kind of, that have missed all of this. And so I'm very proud of the young lady. Her name is Tweety. Tweety, and you know, and so I, another, you know, business associate of mine. So we're doing big things behind the scenes, and I'm trying to stay connected to good people and do good things.
Well, I am so glad that we constantly stay connected, because that's really, really important. And like I said, if there's ever an area where you can use us, let us know, because we will be there. So I want to know, like, do you have any children that is following your footsteps?
Well, you know, I have to tell you, I'm single, no kids, never married yet. I've been close, but no cigar. You know, I've had many beautiful ladies in my life, I have to tell you, and I have loved and loved and lost, but still loved, and you know, I have to say that I take family and children seriously. I mean, I you know, relationships, that's something that is very important to me. I think that that is the glue, the American fabric, and I really believe that. For me, I don't know about nobody else's schedule or what their get down is, but, you know, I plan on, when I do it, I want to do it right. I want to be that man that my father was for my mother. I want to have a wife that is, you know, has a little bit of something in her that is like my mom. Because, matter of fact, I was telling somebody the other day, you know, though my mom was a housewife, I called her a home technician. Because everything in that house was controlled by my mom. There wasn't nothing in that house that she didn't know. You couldn't hide nothing in mama's house. Nothing. I don't care what you had. If you brought it in the house, mama could find it. Because there was nowhere you could stash something that mama wasn't in. Those crevices and those little corners and the drawers. Nothing was off limits. And so, you know, a lot of times, I just remember how my mom took care of things, and I remember one year it was her birthday, and she asked my dad for a sewing machine, and my dad tricked her. He said that he wasn't going to get it for her, but he did. And when mama got that Singer sewing machine, she was so happy. Mama started making pajamas and pillowcases and curtains for every window in the house, and mama just... Man, she started sewing everything it wasn't nothing that, you know, anything that you literally saw, that was my mom. And so I'm not, you know, and I'm not saying that every young lady nowadays that don't have those kind of skills, I'm not saying they don't, but I would like to have somebody that can at least hold down the fort, you know, because if I'm out doing my thing and working, and she's doing her thing. And matter of fact, that was another thing. My mom was very industrious. I mean, though she was at home, mama made money. Here's one funny example that I'm letting a story out of my book. My mom had cooked a cake one day. And my dad said, "Man, Flossie, that's a great cake. Man, you know what? You should sell these cakes." And my mom said, "You think so?" And my dad said, "Yeah, you probably could sell them." So the next day, mama goes to the store, and mama could take a Duncan Hines cake mix, and she did her own whatever, but mama's cakes turned out like incredible. So mama had 20 cake mixes on the table. So my dad walks in, and there are 20 cake mixes, all these different flavors on the table. And my dad goes, "What in the world? Why do you have all these cake mixes?" She said, "Well, you said I should sell cakes." He goes, "I was just joking. I didn't mean to tell you to go try to make all these cakes." She goes, "No, I'm going to do it." He goes, Flossie, do you seriously think somebody gonna buy your cakes? My mom's like, well, I'm gonna find out. So mama and my neighbor across the street got together. They started baking cakes. Man, it was like a bakery. You could stand across the street and all you smelled was cakes all day long. Mama ends up getting all these cakes. And then mama said, okay, Rodney, you're going to be my salesperson. Let's go. So we go up to the local market on the west side of Long Beach, which is still there. Shout out to Villa Markets on the west side of Long Beach. And we're in the parking lot. Now, this is in the 70s. And people would come out with a full grocery cart full of food. And here I was with a plate with some cake on it. I'm like, hi, sir. Hi, ma'am. Want a piece of cake? And they were like, oh, what a cute little boy. Where's your mother? I'm like, that's my mom over there. She's selling cakes. You want a cake? And they were like, I'm like, come on. Come over here. Look at my mom's cake. And mama had all these cakes on the back of the trunk of the car. And people would say, wow, you got a lot of cakes. And my mom said, yeah, you know, I make cakes. Here, try a piece. And it was German chocolate, you know, yellow cake with chocolate frosting and just all pound cake. And mama had all these cakes. And the people would go, that cake is delicious. How much? Mama said, $20. $20? They were like, yeah, mama said $20. So these people were buying mama's cakes at $20 a pop.
That was a lot back then.
Yeah, but here's the funny part. So hours later, me and mama come pulling up in the driveway, and daddy was out in the garage doing something. So he walks in the house, and he looks at my mom, and he says, so, Betty Crocker, how'd the cake sales go? And my mom reached into her bra and pulled out like $400, almost $500. And my dad goes, man, where'd you get all this money from? And my mom's been selling cakes. And he was like, you sold all them cakes? And my mom was like, yep, sold all of them about, except for three. And so my mom ended up giving one to a neighbor. But the whole moral of the story is my mom was able to, even if she was at home, she was always doing something and you know, making money, so to speak. And so yeah, I just think that there has to be a balance, and I think that my mom had it. And so to answer your question, no little Rodneys as of yet, but time will tell. There you go. Time will tell.
Yeah. So, you know, my thing is, you know, I really, listening to you, you know, your morals and values are so in place, and, you know, being an entrepreneur, being a brown man, you know,
yeah.
These days just don't get that, you know, that much anymore, hearing, you know, brothers talk like that, you know what I'm saying? And I'm just like kind of speechless, because just to hear you saying these things, you know, saying and doing it, of course, is different, but just to even hear you saying them, because saying it, because it means a lot, you know, and it really does today, because I keep saying to everybody, we do not have any people of color in our males as role models, you know what I mean, and it's very, very hard to find, so to have someone that, you know, that standing, you know, on solid rock and trying to do the right things and, you know, teach the right things, you know, that really impresses me a lot. And yes, there is some good women like myself. No, I'm just kidding. Like myself, still out there, you
hey,
know, doing the right things. So, you know, they're not all God. You know, I'm not pitching myself to you. I'm just saying that there is women still out there that does all the things that your mother used to do, because I know that I believe in doing those things and, you know, having those things and having, you know, everything tightened in the home. That's very, very important, and building uh-huh. strong homes. That's why I do the type of events and stuff that I do. You know, everybody was,
yeah.
even when we did the break the silence, everybody was like, well, are you going to hire a caterer? I was like, no, I'm cooking everything myself. You know what I'm
you
saying?
You sure so. Did, and that was some good food. Yes, it was. You threw down, you put your foot in that food. Yes, you did.
Thank you.
And yeah.
So I know we've been going at it for a minute, but I do have some a few more questions that I wanted to ask you, and
sure.
I hope that you're good with that. Okay.
You can ask me anything. Let me tell you, I ain't got nothing to hide, so go for it.
All right. And what do you do when you're not doing movies and music and, you know, building apps and, you know, what do you do?
You know what? I really enjoy cooking. I mean, that's one of my pastimes. I enjoy cooking. And, I mean, literally, I hate to say this, but I've been able to outcook most of my girlfriends. Literally, I've made girls. No, I'm serious. I've made girls cry. I mean, seriously. I can't cook as good as you. I'm like, it's all right, baby. You be all right. Don't worry about it. I'm like, you know, because the reality of it is, I enjoy cooking. My, you know, and my, again, I got a lot of that from my mom. I also got some tips from my dad. My dad, he's the grill man, so he could always get down real well on the grill. And so, I enjoy really creative things, and my mind is always thinking about how can I make the world a better place? How can I right some of the wrongs? How can I, through my celebrity, through my influence, say something that's going to matter and really kind of change people? And you know, when you look at, you know, a lot of times people say, well, I'm not a role model. You know, you hear some athletes say, I'm not a role model. I'm like, oh, yes, you are. Whether you like it or not, you are. If you got millions of people who care about you, they wear your jersey, they root for you when you on the field, you responsible. And you are responsible to upholding a decent life. And me personally, I'm just being frank, I do not represent every black man on the planet. I represent me, and I try to tell every brother that I see to do the right thing. And when I see a brother, I'm like, I speak. When I see a sister, I speak. Well, and anybody, I mean, it doesn't matter about race. I treat humans the way I want to be treated. And me personally, I am only responsible for me. So I've had, you know, I've had some serious conversations with sisters, and they said, well, you know, brothers are like this. I'm like, hey, I'm sorry you had that problem with that brother, but that ain't me. I'm sorry. And I'm like,
yeah.
And so what I do is I try to hold my head up high and be the gentleman that I can, and I try to be everything and just not be a bore. That's the whole thing. I don't want to be boring, but I'm not going to be the hot boy, and I ain't going to be, you know, the one to party down all night. Me personally, I like being at home because, you know, yeah, you can go out and have a good time, but the more you hang out, the greater your chances are to get into something. And me personally, I don't like those odds. I really don't. That there's too many crazy people out here. You're standing around places that are packed full of people coughing, people putting stuff in people's drinks, all kind of crazy stuff. I'm like, man, I'd rather be chilling at my house. I'd rather be somewhere sitting around with some beautiful company, listening to some music, having some good food, safe and sound. That's good enough for me.
Amen. So now I have something else I want to get into. Tell me about your worst performance.
Oh, man. Worst performance. I got it. Golly, boy, you're getting into my book. But this is, I'm not going to tell you how bad it was. Let me tell you what I got. I had an audition from my agent. Dorothy called, hey, Rodney, I got an audition for you. Oh, this is going to be great. You know, I know you're not a comedian, but you need to go in on this. This thing, this is going to be big. I got called in for the host of the Apollo, the very first Apollo. And I was like, the Apollo? And so I go in. So when I show up to the casting, Lord, have mercy. I open the door. And when I walked in to sign up, you know, to sign my name on the list, when I turned around, it was every major black comedian from Bernie Mac. It was Steve Harvey. It was Cedric the Entertainer. Everybody was in that room. And when I turned around, it was Bernie Mac. And Bernie Mac, being God rest his soul, I'm signing in, and when I turned around, I said, I wonder who all got called in. And when I looked over my shoulder, right when I looked, Bernie Mac heard somebody come in the room, because these dudes were buddies. You know, they've been out on the road together. So they were seeing who else was called in. So every time the door would open, everybody would look. So when I come in, they turned around and looked, and Bernie Mac, true story, he goes, hey, everybody, it's Rodney Allen Rippey. Ah! And they just died laughing. And I'm like, oh, my God. I was like, I was instantly upset. I was like, why would my agent send me in here? I'm like, oh, no. And I looked, man, there was, remember, what's his name? Red, the one, he wasn't Red Fox, but it's the other brother that was, he was light-skinned, had freckles, red hair. He went, they called him Red, too, but God, I forgot that brother's name. He was there. Bernie Mac was there. Everybody just busted out laughing. Then somebody said, hey, you got a jumbo jet? They all died laughing
you
again.
You told me about Sinbad?
No, not Sinbad. Oh, God, he was, it'll come to me. I have to tell you, but he was another prolific comedian. So all of these huge black comedians were dying laughing at me. And I'm like, I literally felt like I had my feet in quicksand. And I was like, oh, no, this audition is not going to go well. So the guy comes out of the casting office, and he's, hey, what's happening, everybody? Everybody's like, hey, what's happening? So he walks over to the list, and I wasn't number one on the list. He said, Rodney Allen Rippey? Oh, man, you going in first. I said, no. Come on in, Rod. And everybody said, and Bernie Mac said, go get him, Rod. And they all busted out laughing again. And I was like, oh, my God. And when I walked into this casting office, it was filled with black executives. And the guy that walked in came and got me. He goes, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to present to you the one, the only, Rodney Allen Rippey. They was like, huh? And when I walked in the room, they all stood up. And I was like, oh, come on. And I walk in. I had no clue what this was going to be. And I had, like, some of the top comedic producers there. And they said, okay, Rod, what you been up to? And I was, well, doing this, that, and the other. They said, okay, Rod, this is for the host of the Apollo. I didn't know that you did comedy. I was thinking to myself, I don't. And he said, okay, Rod, tell us a joke. And when he said, tell us a joke, I was thinking about Bernie Mac. I was thinking about everybody. My brain just went zero. And I'm standing there with these people waiting for me to throw this killer joke. And so I started telling this story, which was not a joke, because I was trying to find a joke, because I didn't know what they were going to ask of me. And man, so I learned a very valuable lesson. Always have a good joke on you. So I was thinking like, oh, but I went through this. I went through the audition, and so the guy said, okay, so that was your joke, Rod? I said, yeah. He said, okay, Rod, thanks for coming in. And when I walked out the door, as soon as I opened the door, Bernie Mac said something else, and they busted out laughing. I said, all right, see you guys later.
I just walked out the door.
And I got back home, and I called my agent, and I asked her, wow, did you send me to that audition? And they were like, she was like, well, Rodney, it was a huge opportunity. I said, no. I started telling my agent, I said, do you know who was in that room? Do you know who I went up against? But needless to say, that was probably one of my auditions that went down in flames. But it was for the lead host for the Apollo.
So how do you think social media has changed the industry?
Well, easy. That's an easy answer. Sadly, talent and history and a lot of things are seriously being trumped by YouTube views. And you can be somebody, you can be a nobody out of nowhere, and you jump into YouTube, not saying that they don't have talent. They do. They got a heck of skill. And they also know how to build these platforms and formats and their shows or whatever crazy thing that they're building to build up a following. But what's happening in Hollywood now, a lot of times, instead of being cast for things, the first thing they do is go, what's his social media look like? Now, and if you're sitting there and you got 5 million people on your social media, they'll say, oh, okay. Because if they cast them, that person has 5 million people that will know him or her. So it has really changed, you know, the casting world. It's changed the way people are cast. It has changed the way auditions roll. And so you really need to know people, and you really need to have people looking out for you. And when you get into these auditions, you've got to know there's a lot going on. It isn't just auditioning anymore. It's not about your reputation and what you did in the past. Don't matter. What they're looking for, they're looking at these QM numbers. They're looking at these ratings. They're looking at these YouTube views and social media views and these platforms. So just to say, that's why you have to stay relevant. You have to stay creative. And that's why I stay around good people. And also, too, you know, good news travels fast and so does bad news. And so, thank God, I've been able to keep bad news away from me, stay out of trouble. And like I said, I've had, I've been fortunate enough to be here in California, and I've seen it all. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And I just made a conscious choice to stay away from the bad and the ugly. It's because I don't need, you know, those type of things. Because, and that was another thing, you know, I don't mean to be a bummer, but that was one of the things that was, I had an experience with my mom when she was in hospice. And my mom, the last week of her being with me, she had a talk with me, and she said, Rodney, what are you going to do? And I said, Mama, I said, I got to make sure you're okay. And my mom looked at me, and she said, no matter what happens to me, you're going to be fine. And so I started to think right when she said that. And she said, didn't you say you want to go back to California and go to school? And I said, yeah. And she said, okay. She said, your money is set aside for you. She said, I want you to do that. And she said, if you want to go back to California and go to school, you do it. And she said, just promise me one thing. And I said, what's that? And she said, promise me you'll go to California and you'll be a good boy and you won't get yourself in any trouble. And I made a promise to my mom on her deathbed that I would do that. And thank God I have been able to do that, because in 1988, I moved back to California and got enrolled in school, and I got my degree in marketing and advertising, and I have been out here, and I grew up from 19 years old on my own. And I've had every opportunity, to get in drugs, craziness, foolishness, crazy women, and anything else. But thank God, when I came back to California, that was one of the things that I did, this is part of my whole story and my evolution through my book. But the one thing I did was I made a promise. I said, Lord, I'm coming back to California. I don't have anybody here. I don't have my brother, my big brother, to back me up. So if I get into something with somebody, I can't turn to him and be like, hey, man, this dude punched me in the head, man. You need to come help me. That's it. I'm on my own. So I made a promise to myself, and I asked God to keep me safe and always give me an escape. And so I have to say, thank God I've been able to get through life. I've had many wonderful times and friendships and college and experiences out here, but thank God I've been able to stay clear from things that really trap and control and really jack people up. So I'm thankful. And again, I'm thankful for great programming with people like you. I'm thankful for projects. I'm thankful for people who give me these opportunities. Matter of fact, I have to go and host something in September at a women's conference. I got to be the master of ceremonies, and I think it's in Texas. And again, I'm working in education and other creative pursuits. And so I'm just, you know, like I said, I'm just staying happy, staying cool. Thank God. I'm trying to stay healthy, eat right, and just stay away from things that can jack me up. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Well, amen to that. What advice would you give someone who has just started a career following your footsteps?
Prepare yourself. Believe in it. Invest time to make your business, whatever it is, carve out your own niche. I don't care if you are a car detail person and you're detailing cars. Carve out a niche for yourself. Make it concierge. Create something different than anybody else has got. If you've got, if you have a skill set and you play music, don't just worry about playing music and trying to get a deal. Maybe you may never get a record deal, but guess what? You can make music, source music, and now you're selling it to people, and it's in the music. It's in movies and television shows. Maybe you're doing jingles. People say, you know, women are always, and people in general, they love fashion. Well, take your fashion to another level. What can you do with your fashion to make a statement, to make it functional and wearable and be at the right price? So I tell people, dig in to whatever it is that you do and don't give up, and always be open to share. Yes, of course, yeah, it's your thing. Yeah, it's your whatever. But, you know, sometimes some people try to own 100% of nothing. Sometimes you're better off to partner with people and link up power and source and information and talent. Now, okay, maybe you are doing a 60-40 deal with somebody, you know, and you're taking 60 and somebody's getting 40, but it sure beats having 100% of zero. So
yeah.
Always develop, work with good people. And, keep it real. Provide good services. Do your best. And You know, don't give up on your dreams.
Yeah, that's all you can really do. And so, if what do you have coming in the months to come? You know, what's new? What's hot?
Well, again, I'm also a co-executive producer of the Country Soul Music Awards. I'm working with a dear friend of mine, Marvin Sproul. We're working on launching that next year. I am looking at, you know, putting together the celebrity shootout. I have recently established it, and it's, I'm getting everything together for it, but for the Rippey Foundation. So I'm going to be starting my own foundation that may influence people and help people with homelessness and different things. There's so many things that I've come across with people, and I go, there needs to be somebody in this niche, because I see people getting stuck, and they just need that little breakthrough. They need that little bridge to get out. But sometimes, and we can't forget, you know, people who have given their all, like our veterans. So many veterans suffer from PTSD. Matter of fact, I'm a co-partner, and we're kind of doing a co-management deal with an artist by the name of Talon Grace, and he just wrote a song called Save Me that is dedicated to the struggle. I mean, people with mental illness, our veterans suffering from PTSD. People, you know, look at how fentanyl is really just taking people out, and this song called Save Me, we have produced the song, and we really want this song to be out there and actually be a fundraising tool for charities, organizations for, you know, substance abuse, you know, people who are suffering from, again, like I said, PTSD and other things. And of course, you look around and children are under so much stress because of bullying and, you know, the recent things that have happened in the world. It seems that people just don't have any heart anymore. You know, and you see these mobs where people, and sadly there was just a mob of kids, 15 years old, beat some taxi cab driver to death. Somebody punched him, and the guy fell and hit his head, and he died. And these kids are in big trouble. And I'm like, why are people having this? It's like literally, I mean, seriously, it's like a pack of dogs. I mean, back in the day, I don't know if you've ever seen a pack of dogs loose running through a neighborhood. Yeah. I mean, they have a mentality that they're like, well, we're rolling. And if they get after somebody, something, a cat or another dog, they all jump on them. And I'm like, what is going on in the world where people have this mentality that they are literally like just ganging up on people? And I just think that, again, like I said earlier, we need to hit the reset button. We need to hit the reset button on morals, common sense, education, family. I mean, we need to hit the reset button hard. And people need to understand it. And it's sad, and I tell this to young people, and I say it very clear. The media and the law is not playing with you. If you're out here and you plan on doing something crazy or you're thinking about it, you better think again, because it can ruin your life. Because if they catch you, and if they catch your fingerprints or see your face or something, eventually they're going to find you. And it's going to ruin your life. So I tell people, think about it. Before you do something crazy, I don't care if it's 50 of you in a pack, you need to think about it, because anything can go wrong, and it oftentimes does. So I just think that we need to do better. And I know we can. I know we can.
Amen. Well, we are running out of time, and so I'd like to know if you'd like to give your website information for booking.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, so, you know, you can catch me on Facebook, Rodney Allen Rippey. Catch me on Instagram. man, I'm all over the place. And if you can't find me, you can definitely find me on this beautiful radio show because she got all my contacts. That's right.
All right. Well, I want to say thank you for being a guest on Faces of Success Radio. It's been awesome. And I just really love everything that you're doing. Don't stop doing what you're doing, you know, because I know it's going to be everything that you want it to be and some more. And I'm looking forward to that drag race and stuff that you got coming up. I definitely want to cover that when that, you know, and be there and support that. So I hope that everything falls through for you on that for next year. But
yeah.
Again, say thank you for being a guest on Faces of Success, and have a wonderful night.
I definitely will, and thanks for having me on. God bless you.
All right. God bless you, too. Bye-bye.